This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The Peace Corps Women for Change and Empowerment, or W4CE, is an initiative to push forward the women's development agenda in five key areas: governance and integrity, economic empowerment, socio-cultural development, education, and legal rights. And I'm going to find out more about this women's empowerment initiative from Dato Halima Mohamed Said. She is the president of the Association of Voices of Peace, Conscience, and Reason, or Peace Corps for short. Welcome, Dr. Halima. How are you today?
Fine, Juliet. So nice of you to have me here.
Very happy to have you back on the show. You know, we've had you a few times and always a pleasure. So, I, for those who don't remember, maybe we can get to know you a little bit better. I know you served two terms on the MECC's advisory board and as one of a dozen members in 2016, but you resigned. What other avenues have you been involved in to campaign against graft, which is something I know you're very, feel strongly about?
I started in the newspapers, actually. Even when I was, at the University of Malaya, I started writing seriously then into 1998, actually, mm-hmm. 2 years before I retired. Mm-hmm. So I've always been passionate about anti-corruption issues and integrity issues. So, at that time, there was already a lot of a talk about, corruption and, people that we knew were involved in corrupt practices and so on. So I took the issue up on my own, personally, mm-hmm. at the very personal level. Yeah. And then I think I was discovered by MACC, Yeah, I was like asked to lunch with them and they interrogated me. And it took a while before I was actually offered the advisory board committee position. Mm-hmm. I think they had to clear me with the PM's office and a special branch and things like that. But despite all that, anti-corruption persists, all right? And it's like existing on a huge scale now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about being cleared by the PM's office at that time and being cleared by special branch at that time. And the cases, occurred in these places.
Right.
So let's see what's, the real issues here.
Okay. But yep. I mean, are you seeing any positive changes with the MACC and this new administration?
Of course. The announcements are there. Just, I think 2 weeks ago, they had announced this big plan, anti-corruption plan, mm-hmm. In a little book. I think I expected it to be a big book. But when I saw it visually, it happened to be quite a small book, So, and many of the things there were covered during my advisory board days. Mm-hmm. We were already talking about how to, make the, agency, MACC, independent, how to make the commissioner, independent, yeah. and so on. So all the issues were already advocated, in the last 10 years. But now they've come together into a master plan. And I think what is different is that there is a roadmap. As explained by the deputy, Dr. Anis Yusal, there are clear roadmaps and outcomes, targeted for each phase of the plan.
The plan, yeah.
Until 2030, I think. So, for each outcome or for each failure to achieve an outcome, they would actually look into it again and see where they have gone wrong and things like that. So it's an ongoing process, but great things are happening in the way of arrests.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Of the very biggest fish. During my time in the advisory board, it was like people were complaining, oh, the Ikan Bilis are being brought in. But now they've gone on to the Karupas and the sharks.
Piranhas
and sharks now.
Sharks, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sharks now. So that's definitely a great change and a great move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you involved in any way now in any capacity?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. But I do like goad people, on WhatsApp. I'm still in touch with many of my colleagues, so including the present crop, and I goad them.
Well done.
You know, yes. And I said, what is this? You know, even with the... and I write. I write a regular column for Astro Awani now, weekly. And it's bilingual, 1 week in Malay, 1 week in English.
Okay.
And I commented on the anti-corruption plan. And I said, you know, what should be done is a major blitz. You know, the government can be announcing all kinds of things, but the people on the ground are not picking it up or ignoring it. But Juliet, I actually picked up this idea from one of the Women for Change and Empowerment roundtable. We had a special one for youth. And in the youth group came this idea of a slogan, make integrity fashionable.
Right.
All right. Make anti-corruption hip.
Yeah.
You know, and invite or rather appoint icons, youth icons to actually, you know, do it on the ground with the rakyat. So that is something that I propose in the article, that they should get people like Syed Saddiq and Siti Nurhaliza. Maybe Siti Nurhaliza is a bit old now for this crop of millennium kids.
Yeah, but there are so many, you know. There are so many spokespeople who like you said, who the young will listen to, you know, because they don't necessarily think corruption is something that affects them. Maybe there's a slight disconnect.
Yeah, the understanding and you have to make it real for them,
Exactly.
Real for them.
So, I mean, that is great to get somebody, I suppose, in that age group to explain and contextualize it as well.
Exactly. And they were talking about, like, musical groups, like that Korean group. I can't remember the name. But they're so popular, these boys, you know, very cute boys and so on. So make them the spokespersons. Instead of just listening to the old, you know, old hands like me, I'm ancient. But I've
your
got
looks
like,
certainly don't.
I've got grandchildren. I've got 12 grandchildren. And Sophia is the oldest. So I speak their language. They laugh at me. You know, but I know what they think and how they speak and the kind of lingo they use.
Yep.
So I think we have to get down to that level.
Exactly. Yeah? That is important, you know, understanding how they communicate and what's important to them.
That's
right. And again, I'm going to use the word contextualizing it so that they understand it
definitely
better. Yeah, but it's great that you're taking that effort to understand them, because I don't think a lot of people take that effort to, I mean, make the effort to do that.
I'm going all the way, because I've been an educationist all my life. I was teaching in schools for 7 years, and then I moved to university for 25 years. So I'm very familiar with the education scene, especially language education. I taught mainly language and literature, and then after that, linguistics. So I'm also very much into bilingualism. That's a PCOR stand, you know. We've always believed in bilingualism, and we want it done through a proper bilingual policy, bilingualism policy, not just token ones like DLP, dual language policy, and so on. They must actually teach a couple of subjects in English in order to provide the context or the environment for the learning, language learning to flourish. You know, that's a basic principle of language learning. You must be immersed in order to actually internalize the language and the idioms and so on. So that's something I'm also taking up with PCOR, bilingualism.
That's interesting. I mean, as a linguist that you are, you know, for example, learning your grandchildren's lingo, especially, right? I mean, that's how important it is, isn't it? To understand.
Before, there was this term in linguistic theory or in principles of linguistics called motheries. Motheries is the language that mothers use when they speak to young children, you know. So there are certain psychological innuendos and so on. So perhaps there should be another type of re-ease, you know, ease, millennials or something like that for millennium language.
For the millennials to understand. I'm speaking today to Dato' Halima Mohamad Zayed. She is the president of the Association of Voices of Peace, Conscience and Reason, or PCOR for short. And PCOR is part of a Women for Change and Empowerment initiative, which is to push forward the women's development agenda in five key areas. After this quick break, we're going to go through those five key areas and find out more about the roundtable sessions that have been happening and what's going to happen after that. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today, the very lovely Dato' Halima Mohamad Zayed. She's the president of the Association of Voices of Peace, Conscience and Reason, or PCOR for short. And the PCOR Women for Change and Empowerment, or W4CE, is an initiative to push forward the women's development agenda in some key areas. So Dato' Halima, before we get into that, could you tell me a bit more about the Association of Voices of Peace, Conscience and Reason?
Right. We are a citizen movement. I'd like to clarify that we're not an NGO. Mm-hmm. I've got this phobia about being called an NGO because there are all kinds of NGOs these days.
Yes.
And some are so profit-oriented and the voluntary aspect of it is like really minimized. We are purely voluntary, purely non-profit. And we don't have our source of income. We have to fundraise and we collaborate, collaboration with other like-minded organizations and individuals is a very important strategy for PCOR. That saves us costs and we split costs and we share. And the outreach, you know, we share the outreach and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think that strategy has worked very well for us. Right. So and PCOR has 10 areas of concern, Juliet, mm-hmm. and they span the whole gamut of issues, national issues, equality, justice and equality, uplifting the lot of the underprivileged, mm-hmm. And school parents synergy. Intercommunal, interfaith, relationships and things like that.
Okay.
So we started in 2010 on Facebook, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just telling a friend the other day that we were disturbed at that time, because after the 2008 election, the voices of discontent and the voices of dissension mm-hmm. were starting to sound loud and clear.
Yeah.
And we saw it on Facebook. We saw it on other social media. So five of us, you know, Facebook friends thought it's time to have a platform where the voices are more rational, mm-hmm. peaceful, and with a conscience. So that's why many people ask me, what is this about, you know, peace, conscience and reason? How do the three concepts like interconnect,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, peace is peace, yeah? Mm-hmm. And that is the ultimate, like, it's an ideal that we strive for. I don't think it's achievable. Absolute
exactly.
peace is not achievable, but the striving for it, I think, is very important.
Very important,
yeah. And peace in religion, peace at home, in every aspect of society. The conscience bit, because at that time we thought that many people spoke just what they liked without thinking of the repercussions, of the implications of
what they're saying.
They say, which might hurt others, cause interracial, conflict and so on. So we thought that conscience was a very important, value, mm-hmm. all right, or aspect of our movement. And then reason. Reason is to argue out things rationally, logically, based on fact, mm-hmm. and to minimize the emotional aspect of it. Because I'm sure you agree, Juliet, a lot of ill feeling is caused by emotive responses to things. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, just reactive without any thought. Yeah.
But you are right in saying that we all come with a technical terms, it's pre-wired, you know, this mm. context.
Yeah.
We're born into a culture, we're born into a family value system. So this sticks in our minds.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we bring upon our communication, our education, our knowledge. You know, so there is a context inside our heads for every kind of thing.
Which guides us, essentially, yeah, right? Yeah. And everything that we
which
do.
Which guides us and also which prejudices us and yes. which causes all this bias.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we thought we needed a platform where people could engage one another in a very civilized manner, to speak things out, to differ, mm-hmm. all right? Of course, the cliche is to agree to disagree, right?
Yes.
Right? But it's slightly more than that, I think. You take your level of discourse a little higher mm-hmm. and move upwards and forward, yeah?
Yeah, I think what you said, just yep. be a voice, a rational voice.
Rational voice.
Because there's so much irrationality on.
Irrationality. And yeah. it's coming back, you know, Juliet. 2008, 2009 was like that. Mm-hmm. And we were terrified, you know, of the kind. I think at that time it was the terrorism thing, which
yes.
was everywhere, yeah?
Yes.
And Islamophobia and things like that. But now that has settled a bit. It's still underlying, mm-hmm. you know, but it's settled a bit. And there are other kinds of phobias that are creeping up. And of course,
and, you know.
Corruption phobia.
It's never ending, unfortunately. But again, the third part, of course, is being that voice of reason amongst all of these discussions, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you have been around for a while. You're not an NGO, and your members are all volunteers and like-minded souls, I imagine.
Like-minded. We don't have a big membership mm-hmm. because that's not our aim.
Okay.
We can do a lot of work with little groups. We found that out. And it's more fulfilling mm-hmm. to engage people in a small group, you know. In the first 3 years of our existence, we had big conferences, you know, 300 people in a big hall and so on. But after that, we decided that this roundtable modus operandi is very good. Mm-hmm. 10 people sit around a table, 10 to 12, 10 to 15, and they really engage one another. So we have like tables scattered in a big, a smallish room, not necessarily a big room, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And each table will engage one another on a particular aspect of the issue.
Okay.
Like for this, Women for Change and Empowerment, we identified 5 different areas of development.
Yes.
So for every roundtable gathering, we had 5 tables.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
about 70 participants. So just nice. 15 people sat and talked. And at the end of it, they appointed one representative to represent the group's findings.
Okay.
Orally.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And of course, after all that, we collated the mahjong paper where they doodled and all that. We even voice recorded the presentation. And my 5-member team got down to prepare the reports.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I didn't give this to you. But after each roundtable, there is a complete report.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And yeah. I mean, just to talk about those 5 areas, I did mention it earlier, governance and integrity, economic empowerment, social cultural development, education and legal rights. I mean, what were some of the key findings, you know, from these roundtable sessions?
Right. So I think where legal rights is concerned is a much talked about, area and advocacy has been going on for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Culminating in the recent CEDAW human rights, document, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we also pick that up. And because some of the issues are real, they're happening on the ground, like child marriage, office harassment, mm-hmm. and things like that. So we cannot but, right, speak about them or engage women about their experiences and so on. So that's in, but I'm particularly interested, or rather, because I'm a governance and integrity person, so that's my area, and that is something that has not done with women per se.
Mm-hmm, as the focus,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Education, yes.
Yeah.
It's another like cliched area. Everywhere women are in the forefront of education, yet not being given it is not being translated into promotion, into recruitment at different levels of the corporate work. I think the government is doing fine. They're appointing like women KSUs, women heads of department. Quite a lot of that is being done, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently in the corporate sector, they are not so quick in appointing women at top level positions and as board members and so on. Yeah. They're getting there with a lot of push from NGOs and so on, the government.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So that's fine, you know, 70% women in the universities, but less than 30 in favoured positions.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Nope. And something we all
have to push.
Have to push, definitely.
Have to push.
And keep pushing for.
Keep pushing.
Because, you know, people keep saying, oh, it should be based on merit. And are you telling us that there are no women?
Oh, no. Women are excellent in terms of their qualifications and capabilities. Mm-hmm. I think women are fantastic managers. Mm-hmm. Because of this, that managing the home and having to multitasking and so on, we are able to do many things at the same time and do them well, efficiently. So I think managing the office is no problem, minus the politicking.
Mm-hmm, yeah? mm-hmm. And also, you know,
because when it comes to politicking, I think women get very emotional. You should be able to testify to that.
Yes, well, but you know, honestly, I've seen men get very emotional as well. You know, it's a very emotional thing that just, you know, brings it all out. But like you said, if you have to deal with children, you can deal with office politics. It's almost the same sometimes.
And I dare to suggest, Juliet, I think much to the men's chagrin, and also, it won't be supported by data, I think, but I'm trying. Mm-hmm. I think where integrity is concerned, because women manage the home, they impart values to children. They want their children to be honest, to be disciplined. They want their husbands to, you know, tread the right path, right? And chide all of them when they stray, all right? So I think women have this capacity for developing these, circles of integrity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think I propose circles of integrity at each workplace. Now they have integrity units, you know.
Yes.
I think the MECC and the Institute of Integrity started the ball rolling by having integrity units in the government, in the ministries, and also in the corporate sector, mm-hmm. in key multinationals like Petronas. Petronas has a very active integrity unit, mm-hmm. all right, which oversee everything.
Yeah.
All right. So everything pertaining to integrity and anti-corruption and so on. So, you know, women should be managing these circles at different levels. Mm-hmm. In the community, I think the community is one area that's, or one sector that's neglected.
How do you mean?
Residence associations.
Okay.
Rukun Tetangga.
The grassroots sort of movements, is that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, every development should have like a committee. They do have housing committee. Each big development will have their committee. And I think we should like be exposing the residents to things like that.
To managing something that is close to their heart, essentially, right?
Yeah,
and so you know that they will give it their all because people are directly affected. You are directly affected by the management of these things.
But apparently, I mean, it's a furtive thing, you know. Furtive, mainly because when they work out there, they are face to face with the reality of business.
Ah.
So they don't want to be committal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be the spokesperson, you know, because practices die hard, habits die hard. So I don't know. There must be a blitz of some sort.
Maybe there's a fear.
A fear.
Of speaking out, perhaps.
Whistleblowers get nicked,
There's not enough protection in that sense. Mm. Maybe it's also to do with, you know, how we're upbringing, you know.
Yep.
Women
You don't tell on your friends, you don't tell on your family.
Yeah.
How do you create a culture where you encourage people to be vigilant, mm-hmm. even with their family members?
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah.
It's a tough one because there's the guilt comes in, of course,
guilt,
right? And that protection of your
protectiveness.
Your nearest.
That's a key word, you know. Even where inter-ethnic relations are concerned or is concerned, I always distinguish between being racial and being racist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To me, being racial means you're protective of your community. And I don't think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but being racist means you discriminate, you slander, you put people down if they belong to another race. That's being racist.
Mm-hmm.
But being racial just means protecting your own family, your own community.
But, you know, the argument then could be, are you going to be fair in that protection? You know, are you going to overlook certain things?
Definitely.
Because, you know,
definitely
keeping it in the family as such, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's
true. So I think, education plays a big part there.
Of course.
And, you know, methods, strategies, how to tackle these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know how to do it.
So I'm guessing these are the things that were discussed in the roundtables that were held.
And many of the solutions, the proposals overlap because they are universal issues, right?
Of course.
Like one thing about governance and integrity, all the groups realize that people don't know. There's not enough information about even the meaning of integrity.
Yeah.
The meaning of governance, you know.
Yeah, those are, you know, words that are thrown about, but does anyone actually understand the core, what it means? Yeah,
because it's a borrowed word.
Yes.
And even in English, it's a complex composite concept, you know.
Yeah.
Integrity.
So that is something that you're trying to do, like break these things down, you know, make people understand.
And
be interested to understand it as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, as I said just now, when you're dealing with young people, you shouldn't make it too heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and short attention spans are a thing. So you had these location roundtable discussions, you know, and then they to substantiate the generic report and recommendations with input from the ground, correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is next? What there's another roundtable happening, the final one coming up?
Yes. Let me just refer to the generic report.
Okay.
PCOR was approached by somebody in the Prime Minister's office to write something or to do some research on women's development.
Okay.
This was for TN50, which is now a curse word. Don't mention TN50. That's why we changed our brand to Women for Change and Development.
I see.
The original was TN50.
Women for Change. Okay, but
so anyway, we wrote this report in 3 months, all right, and we identified the areas which we think are important, which should be pushed. And so, you know, the minister in charge at that time was very, very supportive. He said, go ahead. So the whole of 2018, last year, we had this location roundtables.
Okay.
Kuala Lumpur, Kuching, Penang, Seremban. And then we had a special one just for youth.
Okay.
Because they will be like the next, you know,
the next young
adults and so on, yeah? So, and at each report, we got different, input, different suggestions and so on. For example, in Sarawak, the legal development of women took a different turn because they are governed very much by their adat.
Mm-hmm.
What is it called? Native law.
Native law.
Native
okay.
law, where inheritance is concerned, where even the adoption of your husband's name and your capacity for work and so on, PR status, all that is different from the West Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're governed by their own local laws, you know.
Okay.
And child marriage. To them, it's like it's part of the tribal society.
Yeah.
You know, it's the extended family system which they practice. So if a girl gets married at 14, there's a whole family to look after her baby, her child, and she goes out to work. She does not leave the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
She continues to work in the fields while the children at home are looked after by the extended family.
Right.
So they say it's a wonderful ecosystem and you're forcing us to adopt the minimum age of 18 and things like that.
Interesting. You know,
very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. And I found that the Sarawak participants were forthcoming. I enjoyed engaging them very much. And the Minister for Women and Family, Dato' Sri Fatima, she was there from 9 o'clock till lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
She was fasting, but she was there. And this is something that ministers in West Malaysia have to learn. They come just for 10 minutes, give their speech, and then wave bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there the minister stayed, and she provided her own input and her own findings. And so the participants were engaged. And the participants, Juliet, let me just say, we wanted men to come. We didn't get many, but there were at least 20% men at each round table, which is good.
Great.
A good start.
I thought that's wonderful.
Because, Juliet, you asked me what's next, and I'm going to start. We're going to start Men for Change and Enlightenment.
Very important.
They are already empowered, right?
Of course.
But they need to be enlightened about present attitudes, change of attitude towards their wives, their you know, their girl, their daughters.
Their daughters, yeah. To change, to get them on board as well. Because otherwise it sounds like you're speaking to the converted already, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, preaching to the
converted.
So
there must be more men. So for this roundtable of experts next Saturday, we decided to convene experts from different fields, right? So there are about 14 experts who will comment on our findings and then suggest the way forward, how to bring it to a higher level, how to get, the right agencies, the ministers, to look at this and to actually implement it in policies and programs. Mm-hmm. So that's our next move.
Okay.
We've suggested solutions, discussed the issues and looked at the indicators and suggested solutions. So now proposed solutions, and now it's to present them to the higher-ups. Okay. To the people in charge, so that they will translate it into proper activities.
So that's wonderful. So you've taken it from the grassroots, and now you're taking it up.
Exactly.
That is, it's not a top down, it's a bottom
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
That's wonderful.
So a lot of advocacy is top down, right?
Yes. And there's a problem with that because you don't understand the greens, you know,
that's
of
right.
what's happening.
So
on the
we
ground.
Got the participants to input the discussion. What do you feel on the ground? What are your experiences on the ground? And after that, we took it up, compared notes across the five round tables, and then we prepared a proper report for each round table, and it's gone into this sort of compilation.
Sure.
And then the experts will comment on it, and we'll also publish a book at the end of it, targeted for June, compilation of everything. And another segment will be, we'll invite academic papers.
Okay.
Because among the experts are academicians from University of Malaya, University Kebangsaan, one from the Philippines.
Okay.
All right. We have, prominent people. So we're inviting them to submit a longer paper to go into this publication.
Okay. So what would you say, if you could just wrap it up in that sense, what would you say would be the main aim of this? You know, what do you hope will come of all of this? It's a lot of effort.
A lot of effort. I see it as a gelling together of different advocacies, right? And there are certain things like in the economic sector. Economics is a big thing now. There's so many things which are seen to have not succeeded, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things is that, women need to be given the assurance that if they perform well, there are opportunities for them to rise to the top.
Yeah.
And I personally don't like the 30% quota, ceiling. Mm-hmm. I think it should be an open thing.
Definitely.
If you qualify, you have the qualities, you have the capacity, for goodness sake, put me up there if I can do the job. Yeah.
Right. I think, it's to make sure that 30% is just to make sure that women are not overlooked at all, because that is a problem that
That's what
happened.
They say.
That's what they say, yeah.
People tell me, yeah. So if there is a minimum or a lower level, then it's easier to fill up. fill it up to the top. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So. But one thing I'd like to mention, domestic work. Mm-hmm. I'm trying very hard to push for, it's in the second section, mm-hmm. Empowerment, to recognize, to officially recognize domestic work.
I
to give it an economic value.
Yes.
Except that my husband and my two sons tell me, if you give it an academic value, you'll have rows and rows of women queuing up, you know, and asking their husbands, you know, to give them that worth.
I don't see anything wrong with that. Even as a working mother, I mean, the amount of domestic work that I have to do as well on top of, you know, paid for
career,
it's on top of my career, it's mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling.
And the toll it takes on you as well. And I know I'm not alone. There are so many of us.
Most of us out there.
Yeah.
And this whole thing about GDP, it is a contribution to the GDP in terms of hours of work and also in terms of the actual value that you put to the work, you know.
Yeah.
If you're prepared to pay a Filipino maid, say, $2,000, all right, surely a wife doing the same kind of work at home deserves to be given a value of $6,000?
Yeah, I would agree.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. With the tender, loving TLC that she applies to her work, yeah?
Of course. And you have nothing to worry about because, you know, the person is giving their all. This is their family. They would do everything for them.
So I'm trying to get some economists like Professor Jomo Sundaram to actually work with us on this. But Professor Jomo has another pet area, which is health and well-being. He said, please take this up with the women out there because, you know, the incidence of obesity and diabetes and so on is really frightening among Malaysians.
Yes, it is.
And it's the women at home, the mothers and the caregivers, that have a direct influence on nutrition, diet and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's something that PCOR will pick up and maybe we'll get, support from the health ministry and like that.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful. This is a wonderful.
A lot to do, Juliet. A lot to do.
So we're looking forward to the final roundtable at the this weekend, and then there's going to be the book in June.
Yes.
And then that's
hopefully.
And that's going to be made available to the public as
yes,
well.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
So we'll definitely need you back then to talk to us about that when
it's
out.
Yes, Juliet. I'd love to do that.
All right. I'm afraid we're running out of time, but is there any last message you'd like to leave
us with? A last message, peace, conscience and reason. I think those are three wonderful values. The Minister of Education has said love, happiness and mutual respect in schools. But I think for the country, for the nation, it should be peace, conscience and reason for every rakyat to actually internalize these values and actually manifest it in your conduct and behavior.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Juliet. Thank you, BFM.
No problem. Our pleasure. I've been speaking to Dato' Halimah Mohamad Said. She's the president of the Association of Voices of Peace, Conscience and Reason, or PCOR. Things, three very important aspects that I think all of us need. And we were discussing PCOR's Women for Change and Empowerment Initiative, or W4CE, which is a women's development agenda. And we'll keep in touch and we'll find out more about that book once it's released, hopefully sometime in June. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. And you do have an FB page, Dr. Halimah, you were saying?
FB, yes. Facebook. We don't have a web page because I think it's like too expensive to maintain.
Sure.
So very active FB page,
okay,
which I manage, and there's something every day.
Oh, wonderful. All right. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.